This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. As an unknown number of immigrants and political detainees still linger in prisons and detention facilities across the country, we hear the story today of Hassan Hassan, a Kuwaiti national who attended university in Long Beach, California, before teaching at Cerritos College. Last year, he was mysteriously fired by the college, only to be arrested an hour later by immigration authorities for violating his visa since he had been unemployed for the past hour. Since then, he has been physically harassed by law enforcement officials and eventually spent time in a detention center where he met other immigrants who were similarly targeted. Hassan's case is typical of the targeting of immigrants under the USA Patriot Act. He was scheduled to appear before a court last Monday, July 7th, and Hassan and supporting activists had mobilized a large support network to appear in court with him when the hearing was postponed to October 2003. Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles spoke with Hassan earlier this week.
My dean came to my classroom and he asked me that he likes to see me in his office after the class. He was not in good shape or not looking good. Even my students had kind of weird feelings. They asked me after the class, is everything okay? I went to his office and he told me, I had an order to let you go. I have no reason to let you go. I tell you, I like you very much. You are one of my best instructors, and I haven't received any complaint, but I am just a messenger, and please leave your keys here and keep going. Just when I opened the door of his office, I found Cerritos College police. They took me for a few minutes until Long Beach police came to arrest me, and then they waited for me for 40 minutes in the parking lot until the INS agents came down, and they said, you are illegal. I said, I still have my work visa, which is valid for 8 more months, and I can renew it every year. They said, that's true, but you are not working, so you are violating the visa. I said, I just came from the classroom an hour ago. They said, yes, you were working until an hour ago, but now you are not working, which make you illegal in this country. But as far as I know, if you have a work visa, then you lose your job. You have a grace period of 60 days to find another job, or if you don't, your visa will be invalid automatically if you don't find a job within 60 days.
So let me understand this. In order to remain legal, in their eyes, you would have had to step out of the country the minute you were fired.
Yes, but there were some changes on the INS laws after 9/11, but I still have the right to remain for 60 days. If I find another job within 60 days, then my visa will continue to be valid and there is no problem. If 60 days pass and I don't find a job, then my visa will be worthless, invalid, then I have to leave. But I wasn't given the 60 days of a grace period.
So what happened next?
I was taken to Long Beach jail, and there they told me that my name came up in a Long Beach serial rapist case, and they insisted that they check my DNA. And after an hour of argument with them, I agreed, and they did. I stayed over in Long Beach police jail, and the following early morning, FBI agent came to question me. Then I was transferred to L.A. INS jail, and I stayed for a day. And the same night, I was transferred to Lancaster jail. And there was no court hearing in my paperwork. There is no bail in my paperwork until a couple of weeks later. Two lawyers came, volunteered to take my case because they heard about my case through the internet, through some rallies. They were able to get me a court hearing date and a bail to be released. All the people I saw in the INS jail, they have no court hearing date. and they have no bail, which means they are held indefinitely. Some of them has been there for months and months, 7 months, 9 months, and they fight hard just to get a court hearing date. They feel happy just if they know that they have a court hearing date, 2 months from now, 4 months from now, it doesn't matter, but at least they feel there is some progress in their cases.
What happened to the accusation that you were a suspect in a Long Beach serial rapist case and the DNA sample?
The result was negative. Actually, they caught the serial rapist about maybe 3 months ago. Serial rapist started his actions, unfortunately, in the same period when I arrived to Long Beach. After 3 weeks, I was released from the INS jail, and I remember it was a sad moment for me when they called my name for release, because I met wonderful people in the INS jail, and I was feeling bad to leave them. And I started hugging them, and they give you a minute only after the call to leave from the gate, or if you don't, they will lock the gate, and you stay over for the whole weekend.
Mm.
So my friends, the folks there, they pushed me, and they told me, you have to run, and I was looking at them, waving at them, and hitting on my heart and saying, I won't forget you. I will be fighting for you.
Tell us a little bit about some of the people that are in the jail right now. If you can share with us some stories, because, of course, there's no other way of really finding out who these people are. First of all, how many there are, what their demographics are, and maybe some stories, if you know.
In Lancaster jail, there's about 30 dorms. Every dorm takes 70 people. There are two or three dorms full of Arabs, but the funny thing, the majority are Armenians or Armenian Arabs or Canadian Armenian Arabs, Ukrainians, Indians, people from Kashmir. People spent about 20 years in this country. Some of them are married from American citizens. They are highly educated. They speak many languages, have American children. Some of them were almost getting the green card.
Mm.
Some of them have the green card. I give you an example of American Arab Arman or Arab Armenian lawyer. He's about 50 years old. He's married for 18 years. He has three daughters in America. He went with his wife to the INS office just to finish the paperwork and sign and get the green card. The officer told him, can you wait outside for 5 minutes? He did comply, and he was waiting with his wife until four INS agents came and arrested him. He was surprised. He said, why you are doing this? And they insulted him in front of his wife, and they took him to the INS jail. When I go to the Lancaster jail, he has been there already for 3 months. This is an example. There is another example of two Armenian a brother and sister who grew up in Russia. Their parents lived in Glendale. They were raised by their grandma. Their grandma died. Then they decided to visit their parents and to make a surprise. They go to LAX. They were arrested. The man was taken to the Lancaster jail and the woman to INS jail. And when I got there, they have been in jail for 4 months. And he told me, I can't communicate with my sister and I can't communicate with my parents because the addresses, the phone numbers in my bag, and my bag is in the property, and you have no access to your property until you are released from jail, which means his parents is an hour drive away, but he has no way, or they have no way to communicate with their parents.
Do their parents even know that their children are in the country?
They don't know. They wanted to make it a surprise.
And I also should mention you have faced physical harassment. Is that correct, by law enforcement?
Yes. After I was released from the INS jail, I did participate in a demonstration organized by Long Beach anarchists, and I gave a speech and criticized the American government and calling America as a police state. The following morning, the Long Beach Anti-Terrorism Task Force, which consists of FBI agents, Long Beach police agents, and INS, while I was sleeping, they broke into my apartment and I was arrested. And the accusation was that I am a self-proclaimed terrorist. And I spent 3 months in jail, back and forth between jail and the courthouse. And I was held in high security locations, and they transferred me every 2-3 days to a different location. And they kept insisting under the Patriot Act and the Secret Evidence Act, they had the right to hold the evidence for national security. But the judge insisted I have to see the evidence for 3 months. They kept trying to win some time, more and more and more, but finally the judge dismissed the case and I was released.
So your court hearing is today. What exactly are the charges? Is it terrorism, or is it violating your immigration status?
There is no case. I have gone to the court for 6-7 times. I haven't seen that they have any case. I used to go by myself. I don't tell people that I have case. I was maybe kind of arrogant, thinking I can fight it on my own. I used to go maybe with 2 or 3 close friends, and the judge always asked for all my friends to leave the court. They want to do their work behind closed doors. But this time I did communicate with them, many friends, many organizations, many media people to come to the court, and I just heard that they did postpone my hearing to October the 20th at 1 p.m. At the INS courthouse in L.A., and their reason was that there are some internal changes in the court, and they had to postpone my court hearing. But I feel the main reason was they wanted to avoid the publicity and having the public witnessing what they are doing, because I was expecting the courthouse will be full today of people, and this they can't tolerate that thing, and they don't like to see public in the courtroom. So because the judge most likely will ask everybody to leave the court.
So it has been postponed, then it's not happening today. It's happening in October.
Yes, October the 20th. I like to thank many people who supported me, many organizations in L.A. Like ANSWER, World Coalition for Peace, Not in Our Name, Refuse and Resist, many of Long Beach folks, in many places like Portfolio Cafe, Kiwi Cafe, and Tony's group in Long Beach, and many other individuals and organizations. And I am sorry if I forgot some names. I will thank many of good American people who showed a lot of support for me for the last year and a half in all ways.
Finally, Hassan, I just want to ask you if you can lay out for our listeners some of your activities, because some have suggested that it was your political activism that, in addition to, of course, your Arab background, that made you a suspect in the eyes of the INS, or made you a good or easy target from their perspective. What were some of the things that you were involved in on campus, because you were fairly active?
Yes, I was always active all my life, and no matter how many times they take me to jail or what they do to me, this gives them more strength and more motivation to keep speaking up and telling the truth. Many people think I hate America, but I don't. The American people are such wonderful people. Maybe many of them are ignorant, but they are good people. I used to be active in many groups. They can be anarchists, socialists. I speak up. I never been a member in any party in my life or any revolutionary group, but I use peaceful means to resist and to speak up. And the INS arrested me. Their focus and their questions were about my attitude towards my government, what I think of my government, why I left my country, why I haven't gone back to my country. And
what is your country of origin?
Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And when they arrested me a second time and they accused me of being a terrorist, all their questions were about the government of my country and what I think and so on. But I will continue to speak up, and nothing will stop me. I feel I have to tell the truth no matter what is the price, if it is my life or being in a prison. This won't stop me losing my job, losing anything. I feel I am more free man when I tell the truth and not being silent. And I do despise the people who keep silent and don't speak up. And no matter if they live in palaces and they have all luxuries of life, I despise these people. I just feel free. I feel peace of mind. They can't put me in jail. They can kill me. It is very easy, but I feel a free man. I can walk late night back and forth at 1 a.m. from the coffee shop to home. They can. It is just it takes a bullet to kill me. Then they can say, "Oh, it was he was caught in gangs crossfire." They can put me in jail and make up some a beautiful case, but this won't stop me from speaking up.
Hassan Hassan is a Kuwaiti national who was detained by immigration authorities. He spoke with Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles.
When did you come to America the free? Who are your ancestors? What is your creed? Who is the father and the son and the we? Where is the spirit that sought liberty? When did you come to America? Long, long before, when the ball followed white. When did your hands burn like gold? The thing that made this land your pride and your joy. When did you come to America? Your crops, came to build your roads, your cities and your thoughts. Say you don't need me, but you know what you've got. This land is your land and my land.
Music by Lila Downs. The 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond yesterday declined to hear an appeal from Yasser Issam Hamdi, a U.S. citizen captured with Taliban fighters in Afghanistan. By an 8-4 vote, the court let stand a January ruling that Hamdi's confinement is justified. A lower court had asked the government to produce more evidence justifying his detention. Yesterday's decision is receiving criticism from civil libertarians in the U.S. Sophia Jill Elijah of the Harvard Law School, an attorney for a number of political prisoners who have been placed in lockdown following 9/11, spoke on this issue at the University of Massachusetts at a conference entitled War on Terrorism or Assault on Human Rights.
After September 11th, well, excuse me, I should say on September 11th, within hours of the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, numerous political prisoners across the country were rounded up and thrown in administrative detention. And because that takes a lot of time to say, I'm going to tell it to you the way prisoners say it. They were thrown in the hole for no disciplinary infraction whatsoever. In fact, what you should know is that political prisoners across the board are labeled model prisoners. They don't cause any problems. In fact, they go around trying to help other prisoners with learning to read. Spanish-speaking prisoners, they help to translate documents. They help younger prisoners because all the political prisoners are now up in years. I know we don't want to say old. Some of us in this room feel a little offended if we say old when people are 50 and 60. Okay, but the political prisoners are all in their 50s and 60s now. The oldest, Sundiata Okoli, is 66 years old. He's been incarcerated for the past 30 years. But all of them were rounded up and thrown in the hole in the wake of September 11th. Initially, they were told they were being put there for their own safety. I don't know about you, but when I want to be safe, I do not want the government to lock me up, okay? And in keeping with protecting them for their own safety, they denied them access to their lawyers, their families, and their friends, because you know how dangerous lawyers can be, right? Particularly to their clients. So, for instance, Marilyn Buck and Sundiata Okoli, two political prisoners who I've represented for a number of years, were not allowed to receive any letters from me, any visits from me. They could not make phone calls to me, write to me, and letters that I sent to them disappeared into that never-never land. They never received them, and they were never returned to me. And in fact, when I asked the counsel for the Bureau of Prisons what they were going to do with my mail, they revealed a deep secret. They didn't know. And I guess they still don't know because the mail hasn't turned up. Marilyn was held in the hole for several weeks, Sundiata for several months, Richard Williams from September 11th to February of last year. Now, the person who has the button for the door for whether or not people get thrown in the hole has been John Ashcroft. You got a lot of faith in him. All right. He's the one who made the decision about the political prisoners in the wake of September 11th and who made the decision about the Cuban Five. Now, this whole thing about no access to lawyers has grown hair. Lynn Stewart, an activist attorney out of New York, had years ago represented an Egyptian cleric by the name of Sheikh Abdel Rahman, who was targeted by the U.S. government for a number of things, sentenced and incarcerated in the Midwest. Lynn Stewart continued to be his lawyer and visited him infrequently, but enough, I guess, to draw the attention of the Bureau of Prisons and the folks in Washington. And back in May of 2000, now for those of you who may not have your calendars with you, May of 2000 does predate September 11th, 2001, predates the Patriot Act 1, 2, and its grandparents. So, in other words, none of those legal repressive measures were in effect in May of 2000 when Lynn Stewart's communications with her client, Sheikh Rahman, were being monitored. John Ashcroft unabashedly and proudly says, yeah, we were monitoring her communications. Now, some of you may say, well, there must have been some program that allowed the government to do that because, after all, I mean, they wouldn't do that, not to a lawyer, without, you know, permission. Well, I can tell you that long before May of 2000, some of my visits to Sundiata Okoli in Leavenworth Prison out in Kansas were monitored. I mean, you know, most of the time when I would go to see him, I could pick whatever seat I wanted to sit in the visiting room. But there were certain times where I went where I was told to sit in a particular seat. And years later, there was litigation brought on behalf of some other political prisoners by a law firm in Chicago. And when we compared notes, we found that that same seat in Leavenworth was the seat I'd been in and the lawyers for them had been in. Not the hot seat, but the monitor seat. But anyway, let me go back to Lynn because I know I'm running out of time. Lynn, communications, as I said, with Sheikh Rahman were being monitored. She used an interpreter with her because she doesn't speak Arabic, surprise. And her interpreter and she, her paralegal, and another gentleman were indicted, arrested, and held initially without bail. They're now all facing criminal charges, conspiracy. They were subject to what they call special administrative measures, SAMs for short, like Uncle Sam. Now, the thing about SAMs that is important is SAMs requires that the Bureau of Prisons notify counsel and the client that their communications are going to be monitored. That's neat. They didn't do that. So Lynn had no idea that the government had a program to monitor her communications with her client. Not until the Fed showed up at her law office hauling out hard drives from the computers in her office and boxes of files. The government is now conceding, well, no, the Patriot Act didn't allow them to do that, and maybe SAMS didn't allow them to do that, and maybe none of the other programs that you all are familiar with allowed them to do it, but maybe FISA allowed them to do it. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which, if you read it, analyze it, soak it in vinegar, and pull it out again, you still will not find anything about monitoring confidential communications between an attorney and a client. But that's the hook that Ashcroft is trying to use to justify his monitoring of those communications and what he's going to use to try to convict those four individuals. The move to cut off counsel is part of this bigger picture that we're focusing on today. Two U.S. citizens, Mr. Hamdi and Padilla, both of whom you may have heard of in the news, were charged, we don't know when they'll ever be brought to trial, for quote-unquote terrorist acts, have been denied access to counsel. Mr. Padilla's attorney, Donna Newman, has tried in the courts. The judges have actually found that, indeed, these people are entitled to have access to counsel, and the government continues to refuse to allow them access to counsel. This all roots back to a very interesting memo written by retired Colonel Donald Woolfolk. Okay. Woolfolk is based in Guantanamo Bay, you know, finger on the pulse in what's happening in Washington. He's the deputy commander of the Joint Task Force. And because of this quote, this is the quote that the government and Ashcroft have hung their hats on as to why these people should not have access to counsel. And it reads, the detainees, these political prisoners, etc., their future value as a source of intelligence creates conditions of psychological dependency. Access to counsel would compromise the investigation.
Sophia Jill Elijah of the Harvard Law School speaking recently at a conference at the University of Massachusetts. Special thanks to Mark Weaver of community radio station WMBR in Cambridge, Massachusetts for production assistance. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineers today were Scott Gurian and R.H. Brown. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA, Benta Berklin, Chuck Rosina, Joya Jefferson-Nuri, and Harmony Rising. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. It's your financial support that makes Peace Watch possible, so we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.